Eliezer placed Nezem Zahav, a golden nose ring, with the size of a Becca Mishkalo, Shnei Tzimidim Al Yadeha, two bracelets on her hands, and Asara Zahav Mishkalam. And what? 10 gold shekel he gave. Okay, so there was, again, there was a Becca, which was a Mishkalo of the gold nose ring. There was two bracelets, and then 10 golden pieces. Okay, that's what he gave to Rivka. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel and Rashi comment, what's the half shekel? This hints at the shkalim that the Jews will give in the future, right? A half shekel per head. And the two bracelets, this hints at the two joined tablets, the Shnei Luchos. What are the 10 shekels weight of gold, the 10 shekel of gold? This hints at the 10 commandments written on them, the Aseres HaDvarim. Okay. We understand why Chazal connected Eliezer's decision to marry Rivka to Yitzchak with the giving of the Torah. That makes sense, right? Eliezer grasps the importance of his decision for the entire future of Avraham's house, of his legacy. If he performed his mission with understanding, and Rivka was a suitable wife for Yitzchak, then all the promises given to Avraham, they would be fulfilled. The seed of Avraham would be worthy of the divine revelation and the giving of the Torah. And from them, meaning from Yitzchak and Rivka, would be forged, ultimately, a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. The fate of the tablets and the Aseres HaDvarim, it depended upon Eliezer's decision. But why did Chazal introduce the symbol of the chatzi shekel? Why was this mitzvah singled out from all the mitzvahs in the Torah to symbolize the future of Israel, the future of the Jewish people? The chatzi shekel, that reflects our basic outlook on man. Each individual must give a pidyon, a ransom, for the soul, like a kofer nefesh, the term is used, right? The ransom for the soul is not a sin offering, nor is it a guilt offering. The ransom is to be given by every individual, sinners as well as God-fearing, ordinary Jews as well as Talmidei Chachamim, Israel's greatest men and its hewers of wood and drawers of water. Every person should know that he commits transgressions and he does not always stand upon the pinnacle which he can attain. A person must never forget that despite greatness in Torah, greatness in wisdom, one cannot decide and answer every question. There is no Jew, even the greatest in this generation, who has nothing to learn from even an ordinary Jew. What do we say? Ezehu Chacham, who is the wise man? Halomed mikol Adam, someone who can learn from each and every person. Before Eliezer finally made up his mind to choose Rivka for Yitzchak, he turned to her with a question. Please tell me, is there a place for us for lodging in your father's house? And when Rivka answered, yes, there's a place to lodge, Eliezer was convinced that she was suitable for Yitzchak. Why was the quality of welcoming strangers, why is that so important to be the legacy, to be the Mesorah of Avraham and Sarah? Because this quality reflects this spiritual attitude towards others. A Jew who senses that he or she is far from perfection will recognize that others, though they may be less than me, can teach me something new. When one understands that I need a ransom, I need a kofer nefesh, then every guest is important. Since by means of every man, one may discover a fresh insight into eternal truth, and a new light may shine with the appearance of the stranger. But if the Jew is convinced of his own righteousness or his own scholarship and wisdom, when he thinks he can never err, when in his opinion he has no need to give a kofer nefesh, a ransom for the soul, he is not therefore obliged with a half a shekel, then that Jew is unable to perform the mitzvah of welcoming guests. For what do these guests have to teach him? Is there a place for us for lodging in your father's house? Is there room in your father's house for the messenger of Avraham who brings a new faith, a new ethic, a new morality? Or are you the aristocrats of Haran, so proud that you do not wish to give ear to the poor Meshulach from the land of Canaan? To this, Rivka answered, there is also a place to lodge for many nights. Gam means not just tonight, but for many nights. Eliezer, I long for something which my father's house cannot give me. I thirst for new tidings. I am ready to sit all night and listen to the stories that you will tell me of that mysterious Avraham who left us in Haran so many years ago. Eliezer, I need redemption. I need a kofar nefesh. I am ready to learn. Only then did Eliezer decide that she was indeed the suitable woman for Yitzchak. The half shekel is the symbol of Jewish humility, of Jewish submission, and Jewish readiness to be the eternal student. You know, Eliezer defines himself, and he's called throughout the Parsha as Eved Avraham, Eved Avraham Anochi. I am Abraham's servant. Saying a servant to Abraham would emphasize only the juridic social aspect. You know, if he said, you know, Eved Le'Avram, that's not what he said. He said Eved Avraham. That statement would imply that while he belongs to Abraham, legally, spiritually, he's a free man. He has his own mind and an independent approach to reality. By stating instead, not saying that I'm an Eved Le'Avraham, but he says Eved Avraham Anochi. What does that imply? Eliezer identifies his whole personality with Avraham. Serving Avraham is not just incidental. It is the whole purpose of his life. That is why the term Eved Hashem, servant of God, is used in the Bible. Our service to the Almighty is not something foreign and incidental. It is indispensable to our existence. It is intrinsic and inseparable from our ontological awareness. What are we? We are servants of Hashem and nothing else. So it says, Vayeshalchu es Rivka. So the family sent Rivka, their sister, Achosam, and they sent with her Ves Menikta, her nurse. Why was it necessary to tell us that Rivka's nurse joined the caravan? Even more intriguing is the verse in Vayishlach, in Devorah, Rivka's nurse died, and she was buried beneath Beit El, beneath the plain. So he named it Alon Bachus. The Bible does not record the deaths of Rivka and Leah, but yet it tells us about the death of Devorah. The answer is clear. Devorah raised Rivka. She made a great woman, a prophetess as holy as Sarah, from an ordinary pagan girl. Rivka and her children listened to Devorah and let themselves be guided by her wisdom. She was responsible for Rivka's education and the secret loyalty to Avram's covenant. See, the question is, how did Rivka become Rivka in a house of Besuel? How did she become Rivka? And the answer is that Devorah was mashpia upon her. Devorah was one of those, you know, hanefesh asher asu v'charan, one of the people that were impacted by Avram and Sarah when they transformed, as the Rambam says, tens of thousands in Haran, in Syria. And she remained in Syria. And she influenced Avraham's great-great-niece. And that, it was the influence that transformed Rivka. It describes, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. That Yitzchak goes, we translate Lasuach is to pray. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. He went forth to pray in the field. Yitzchak originated the Mincha prayer. Because why does it say? It says, Lifnos Arev, as the day was setting, the Mincha prayer. Avraham originated the Shacharis prayer, as described in the verse, right? Avraham arose early, right? Vayashkem Avraham baboker. And what does it say? He stood, vayamod, in the place. The Torah emphasizes Avraham's erect posture during prayer. In Yitzchak's case, the term lasuach parallels a phrase from the beginning of Kapitel Kuf Bev, Psalm 102. Tfila la'ani ki yatov, a prayer for the afflicted when he swoons, V'lifnei Hashem yishpoch sicho, and he pours his supplication before Hashem. Lasuach connotes the prayer of a broken man who cannot stand upright. Just the opposite of Avraham's tefillah. These two postures reflect the two types of prayer. Avraham, who was the paragon of chesed, of expansive kindness, consistently prayed for others. Moshe similarly prayed on behalf of the nation in the aftermath of the Chet Ha'egel, the golden calf. The word which introduces Moshe's prayer, Vayechal, it has the connotation of a demand, Amar Rabbi Abahu, the Gemara in Brachos Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Moshe seized HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a person who seizes his friend by the garment and says before him, Ribono Sha'olam, Master of the Universe, I shall not release you until you forgive and pardon them. One stands erect while making such a request. Yitzchak, on the other hand, represented the attribute of Gevura, which implies withdrawal, contraction, an inward movement. When one prays not on another's behalf, but on one's own behalf, then one's stance is bent over, it's stooped, as a poor man begging at the door. Yitzchak's prayer was therefore made in meekness while bent over. When Moshe prayed to be allowed to enter the land of Israel, the word that is used to describe the tefillah of Moshe is the eschanan, which has the connotation of abject supplication. The Tachanun prayer is derived from the word va'eschanan, connoting the idea that our request is entirely undeserved, that we have no merits that would justify any request on our own behalf. Hence, the Tachanun prayer is recited while bent over. When Rivka saw Yitzchak davening, the verse records va'tipol me'al hagamal, which can be translated as she fell from the camel, her fallen posture reflecting Yitzchak's own humility during prayer. It says, Vayikach es Rivka, Vatihi lo leisha. And Yitzchak took Rivka, and she became his wife. Even though Eliezer told Yitzchak all that had transpired in Haran, and notwithstanding Eliezer's portrayal of Rivka in the most glowing of terms, Yitzchak did not take her for a wife immediately. There was no question about Eliezer's trustworthiness. The Torah testifies that in regard to Avram's estate, Eliezer ruled over all that was his. He was very loyal and very devoted to Avraham. However, the halacha states it is forbidden for a man to betroth a woman, to do kiddushin, that he does not know. Yitzchak took Rivka into Sarah's tent to determine if she was the worthy successor of Sarah. Would she restore the glory and pristine beauty of the tent? Will the same cloud appear? Will the dough rise? Will the candle be lit? Only after he was personally convinced that she was a worthy successor to Sarah did he marry her. Marriage is a personalistic commitment, an existential union. Two strangers decide to unite destinies, to share in the same fate. This all-encompassing commitment, it cannot be undertaken on an outsider's word alone, no matter how loyal that outsider is. The end, it describes, the end of the Parsha, all of the many descendants of Yishmael, the Elish Mos B'nei Yishmael. Yishmael became a large nation, very large nation numerically, controlling a significant amount of territory. In contrast, Yitzhak had only two children. Sarah and Rivka's difficulty giving birth contrasted with Yishmael's family of 12 children. We, the Jewish people, we must pay a high price with every advance. I want to now go back to the beginning of the Parsha. There are two very important points. One is that Avraham defined himself as Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. We're talking about when he approached the Hittites, the Chittim, in terms of trying to acquire a burial place. What does it say, Ger v'toshav? That's an oxymoron. You're either a stranger or you're a resident or you're an alien. You're an Aryan or an alien. How can you be Ger v'toshav? And they didn't understand that phrase. And this whole dialogue goes back and forth and back and forth between Avraham and the Chittim. And the operative word is there, Shema'eni, Shema'uni. He keeps saying, please understand what I'm saying. They don't really get it. And they keep saying to him, please understand what we're saying. What was happening? They revered him. They respected him, even though he was a monotheist. He was not a pagan Canaanite. He was a monotheist. But they say, Nesi Elokim ata b'sachenu. You're the God's prince. They acknowledge his greatness. And what do they offer him? B'mivchar kevarenu kforas mesecha. Please bury your beloved in Arlington National Cemetery, in the choicest of our sepulchres, in Arlington National Cemetery. There's certain things in life, no matter how wealthy you are, you can't pay for. You have to earn getting into Arlington National Cemetery. You can't buy it. And this was a Hittite version of that. And yet this outsider who had come from Syria, this outsider who was not a fellow pagan like they were, they gave him the highest honor. And he kept saying he appreciates it, he's grateful, but no, he needs what? He needs to acquire it. Not just to acquire it as a stay mikna, but as a stay achuza. He wants to acquire it where it will be totally under his descendants' control. Everything. The border, the land, the trees, you name it. Why does he insist on that? And that's what they don't understand. See, because as much as he's a Toshav, and he is a Toshav, he, like every Jew, by definition, must be invested in the education of the society, in the welfare of the civilization, in all of the needs of the community. There's no one more loyal than a Jew. No one more loyal to his country than a Jew, because that is our religious mandate. But at the same time, he's not just a Toshav, he's also a Ger. And those are not binary. That's a dialectical existence. And a Ger means that there's a different type of chinuch, a different education. And it means that who we marry has to be someone committed to our destiny. And it means that where we're buried, our burial, because we have a different destiny. And we represent a different value system. And that's very hurtful. And that's very painful. Until this day, the Jew is accused of dual loyalties. Are you an American or are you an Israeli? Are you an American or are you an Israeli? And they don't understand that we are both. That our homeland is America and our motherland is Israel. And that there's no contradiction. But the world sees it that way. And how does Ephron the Chiti go from wanting to give it to him to it turning into Arba Meo Shekel Kesef over Lasocher? 400 silver shekel for a place of a cave? Can't even be worked? What? And not only that, it has to be over Lasocher, international currency. So many want to explain, you know, he was the classic manipulative funeral director taking advantage of a distraught husband. But that is not the case. That's not how the Rav learned it. There are those who learn that way. There are Meforshim who learn that way. The Rav felt that when they finally understood what Avram was saying, that he had to have a separate burial, a different burial, representing a different destiny, representing a different value system. That's when they were hurt. Here they offered him Arlington National Cemetery, B'mivchar kivarenu kvoras mesecha, and he rejected that. He says, okay. That if you insist on your own unique, distinct burial where only Jews can be buried, then it's going to cost you. And that issue, the Rav, when he explained this, this was the same issue that repeated itself with Charles de Gaulle. Charles de Gaulle, when he was the prime minister, the family of the Rothschild, the famous Rothschild family who had invested so much in France, had invested for talking centuries in the welfare of France. And what happened? Baron Edmund de Rothschild, who put in his will when he was buried that if the possibility would arise, he would like to be buried in the communities that he funded, that he paid for, that were developed because of his largesse in Israel. And till his body was interned by the family, and it was buried in a place called Har HaNadiv, the Mount of the Philanthropist, in Zichron Yaakov. What happened? De Gaulle said, listen, I thought he was a Frenchman. I thought he was a loyal Frenchman. I thought you, his descendants, were loyal Frenchmen. But obviously that's not the case. And De Gaulle actually tried to prevent this from being happened. The Rothschilds had attorneys that he couldn't prevent it. But his relationship with the Rothschild was never ever the same afterwards. Because why? De Gaulle couldn't understand what Ephron HaChiti couldn't understand. And that's the destiny of the Jew. If we had to have a bumper sticker, if we had to define ourselves, the definition of a Jew in the diaspora is Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. It's a dialectical existence. We are Gerim and we are Toshavim at the same time. Unfortunately, because we've run out of time, There's an incredible piece of the Rav. Those who have the Mesoras HaRav Chumash, it's page 158. Please try to understand, what does it mean? Mea Shana, Esrim Shana B'Sheva Shanim. What kind of a hesped, of a eulogy, did the Ribono Sha'olam give Sarah? She was a woman of 100 years, she was a woman of 20 years, and she was a woman of 7 years. And if you look at the Rav, he quotes the Girs of the Yalkut Shimoni to explain the equation between 7 and 20, and the equation between 20 and 100. What is the greatness of Sarah? And the same thing is said about Avraham. You want to know, Vayiyu Yemesh, what were the days of her life? The days of her life is, she always retained that which is special and unique of a 7-year-old. She always retained throughout her life that which is unique and special of a 20-year-old. And she always retained in her life that which is unique and special of a 100-year-old person. Because each of those stages, we, most of us, transition. We leave a certain stage and we become something else. We transfer at a certain stage. You know, we lose our optimism and our idealism as we've been, you know, so to speak, we've been sullied and poisoned by certain experiences in life. Sarah, despite all of the disappointments that happened in her life, she never, ever lost that optimism and that idealism. Sarah, what does it mean she had the innocence of a 7-year-old, according to the Yalkut Shimoni, the beauty of a 20-year-old. She was always free of sin. She always was excited to help another person. But at the same time, she had the maturity of a 100-year-old. There's a wisdom you can only have that comes through experiencing and living life. And what happened? She had the greatness of each of those stages at each stage. And she never, ever left or lost what is special and unique of those various stages. And that's the nature of a Jew. And that's what enables someone who strives to be a student of Sarah, a student of Avraham, a descendant of Avraham and Sarah, those qualities. And the Rav so beautifully, and I want you to look at page 158, 159, he talks about, there's the Talmud Torah of a wise, mature, experienced person that sits rationally. But that same skill set, intellectually and personality-wise, doesn't allow for the tefillah. For proper tefillah and proper amunah, you have to have the strength of a 7-year-old or the qualities of a 7-year-old. And the Rav says it so beautifully when he describes who Sarah was and who Avraham was. There's so much more, but we're way over. I want to wish everyone a good week and just enjoy the pearls and diamonds that the Rav gives us each and every week.